Hi, BW here. Just a quick warning before we kick off. This episode of It's Not a Race contains music with explicit lyrics. So do what you need to do now to shield any sensitive ears.
I'm so hot, watching the telly, the prejudice's non-stop, burning alive, and I need to scream and shout. This is the part where my fire comes out.
Hello, my name's Candy B, Candy Bowers.
Hello, my name is Busty Beats.
I'm an actor, a writer, a producer, and a teacher.
And I am a musical director, composer, and sound designer for theatre, music, circus, whatever comes my way.
And I create radical black feminist dreaming work that speaks directly to the experiences of what I see as the most kind of invisible and voiceless in our communities.
I've been working kind of across industries and across genres for the last 20 years, making art and music and sound and performing as well.
And yeah, I try to bring as much joy and rage as I can to the stage.
Hi, I'm Beverly Wang, and this is It's Not a Race. Busty Beats and Candy Bowers. They're a confident, creative, collaborative sister act. They're co-artistic directors of the Black Honey Company, which is probably best known for Hot Brown Honey, a political, black and proud, women-only hip-hop burlesque show that's toured Australia and beyond.
Your mama's so fat, she as big as a city, witty and fitty, she not itty-bitty. Why you tell jokes about a woman so pretty? You came from her kitty, you drank milk from her titty, come on.
Yum, 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 yum.
So who better to share their experiences about working while black in the arts and why they've been so unafraid to speak their minds and call out wrongs where they see them?
We were always vocal about it. We were always direct to the people we were working with and discussed it openly in open spaces at forums and stuff like that. But the difference is now is that Twitter gives us a platform to actually speak directly. I've spoken directly to quite a few people. And probably one of the more recent ones was to the folks at Adelaide Cabaret Festival, and Eddie Perfect said to me, this isn't the greatest place to have a conversation like online on Twitter. And I said to him, if you actually look at our recent modern history, actually Twitter is the place where black women have been able to have conversations, particularly with white men and with white men in power. And that's not to say I have personal bones with any of these guys. Most of the guys that run the arts institutions and festivals around the country are probably the nicest white guys you might ever meet. The problem is power, systemic and structural. So for us, having a voice in the public sphere has changed everything.
In terms of being a performer and an actor, trying to break into spaces and get roles, tell me a little bit about some of the unconscious bias that you've encountered. Because it can be so hard to pinpoint, right?
It can be, but in my industry,
from the perspective of someone else when you're trying to explain it to
sure,
them.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. In my industry, I think it's a bit more stark, though, because you just can't get a casting. You know, I was talking to my friend Ra Chapman, and she'd come back from the UK and you know, been around the US and stuff, and she played major classical roles. And now she's Korean-born, adopted by white Australian parents, so she's grown up very white. To come back to Australia and not get classical theatre auditions because, well, we're not really looking for a Korean blah-blah or a blah-blah. So for me, it's quite stark. You know, I can't do the thing where I change my name to a Western-sounding name and then just turn up and go, surprise. You know, I can't send in a blonde, blue-eyed photo and turn up and go, bam!
They're going to be surprised.
Yeah. And so what I found is the changes are happening faster on television. So quite a few times in the recent history, I've gotten roles that didn't have a gender or a colour connected to it. They just wanted a charismatic person. And quite a few times it's come down, like I'm in a big NAB campaign at the moment, and that was down to me and a white guy to midnight the night before they made the decision. And when I spoke to the executive at NAB, they were just like, you were just so much more charismatic. We've totally never seen anyone like you before. And we just think it's time, but also you were better.
You know what's interesting, actually, is you see the catch-up happening a lot faster in advertisements than actual TV programs.
Yes.
Eh? What do you think that is behind that, Candy?
I think it's the difference between the mythology we want to create around what it is to be an Australian and literally the marketplace. So in the rest of the world, like Broadway in particular, I was there with the Big Apple course and speaking to the folks at Broadway League, and they were like, well, we are looking for Latino and Black artists to write from their perspectives because population is our dollars, is the people coming through. And right now, the industry is still very white in the theatre, dramaturgically, directorially, all that stuff. So they were looking quick, fast to shift it up. And, you know, the talent is so ready to go that once people embrace it, once people go, yeah, okay, we'll give Lin-Manuel Miranda a gig. Yeah. It actually ends up being breakthrough, like the biggest deal in the world, like the most Tonys ever, because we've been working so hard at our craft that we're very, very good. It's like with Hot Brown Honey. The women in Hot Brown Honey have been working so hard at their craft for so long. You put them all together on a stage and people are blown away by the skill level. And there's a little backwards compliment in it. Because we shouldn't be so confident. We shouldn't exist. If we were just in response to the erasure and the barriers, we wouldn't exist.
That's one other thing I've noticed in some of the videos of Hot Brown Honey that I've seen, Busty, is that over and over again, you've got the women in the company saying quite directly, we're confident, we're good. And that actually struck me because I think there is this sense of having to be humble that we're indoctrinated into. And I was like, whoa, they're just saying it. So was that a really conscious choice?
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, we, for us too, like the process of decolonization is actually happens on the stage for us every time we get on stage. And the process of going, you know, the conversations that we need to have within being a group of these amazing First Nations women of color, black women, brown women on stage. We actually were at a point where we were like, we know we're good enough. There's no way we're not, because we've seen so much mediocre work and all these amazing women are working on the fringes, doing amazing breakthrough, groundbreaking work. So, and it was actually a process. We actually had to put it in like a code of conduct to say, you will conduct yourself as an amazing woman of color, because sometimes we go there, we go down to that path again where we're feeling completely assimilated, but we're like, contractually, we are the best.
You know, it's an interesting one too. We just had we just did One the Bear, which is a work that I created for teenagers at La Boite in Brisbane, our first kind of big outing. We did it in a smaller way in Campbelltown in May. And one of the most amazing pieces of feedback I got was from Alethea Beetson, who'd been working with young women from Thursday Island, and she brought them all down because they were doing a performance at the museum, Torres Strait Islander girls. And she said, after the show, they walked around with so much sass and confidence. And what I don't think Australia quite understands is by starving young women of colour of our image, of that shock of recognition, of our icons, of those leaders, it actually creates a real lack of confidence, not in truth, but in kind of this superficial sense, you know?
Are you awake to this? Are you aware of it? On the lack of colour, where do you sit? You are a part of it. We're all a part of this. South African mother, born in the height, invisible, voiceless, unless you were white. I was born here and it's the same fight. Who am I to speak? I'm the one with the light. The one who lives in this skin day and night. And I'm done making excuses because this shit ain't right. People are being blocked. People are being blocked. People are being blocked.
This idea of when you're trying to break through into the spaces, the mainstream places, the theater companies in your particular industry, the music industry for you, Busty, there is this idea of the price of admission, of how you need to be in order to be the person that gets through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious to explore with you how you describe that price of admission. Candy, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm very defiant about that. I look around and I do see other women of colour with their heads down just doing their job. But what it means is then they're the only women getting that work and doing their job for years and years and years and years. And I've never seen any other community rising with them. Like when we make work, we are dripping in mentees. We are passing it on to the next. It's our duty as First Nations women to do that, to pass it on to the next, that inheritance. So I'm very defiant about that price of admission. I don't follow those rules.
But how do you see it being coded to you as this is what you have to do? What does that cost?
You get squashed, you get undermined, you get told that you're the one alienating yourself even though you're the only black woman in an entire building of 100 or so people. You get questioned and shook and kind of like made to feel like you're always in the wrong. I talked about it a lot on Straight White Men when I worked at MTC, and I told my team that things would happen. In regard to that show, like it opened with a whole lot of music that I was very familiar with that made people like from my community excited to be in the room, but it made a lot of older white people very nervous, very uncomfortable. We played feminist hip hop like My Neck, My Back. It was something the playwright Young Jean Lee had asked for.
Into it, don't stop, just do it, then you roll your tongue from the crack back to the front.
And then the company, because they'd had hundreds and hundreds of complaints by their white mainstay audience, they asked that music to be turned down. And what I said to them, by turning that down, you turn down the experience of the women of colour and the playwright and myself as representing that space. So it was it's always about the comfort of the dominant culture rather than the comfort of myself or the women that I'm representing. So that's a specific pushback I've always felt, and I feel it strongly in my industry, and my all-white kind of cast and team around me began to see that for the first time. Like my director actually admitted to me when I first brought this stuff up, she thought I was making it up. And I think that's a really honest and real and raw thing for her to do. I think she's a great woman, Sarah Giles. And then she, when it happened, she was really emotional about it as she saw things happening, and I remember her saying to someone at one point, let's call a spade because that's what happens. We call it every other name rather than just going, this is what's happening. This is racism, you know.
Busty, can you share an experience like that?
Oh, yeah. There are so many. I don't think in this country particularly the experiences have I live in post-traumatic stress basically because of the gaslighting that has occurred, like even with working with such wonderful, phenomenal women and with Hot Brown Honey winning so many awards, you know, it's kind of like we still, at the bottom line, get told we're in the wrong.
Busty, you mentioned it briefly earlier, but the big thing that we're talking about here, Candy and Busty, is decolonizing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you, I'll start with you, Busty. How do you think about that? How do you explain it? How do you kind of try to put it in practice?
Yeah, I would say it is about critiquing, questioning, and connecting with a whole way of being that has been squashed by colonization. Yeah. It's a really big process.
I talk about getting the gold star from yourself rather than the gold star from the white patriarchy, essentially. So for us, you know, having hundreds of black kids in to see when the bear is our gold star. It's like, say a show like Elephant Man that was on at Malthouse. It was reviewed by many male reviewers, and then there was a critique done by a disabled activist. It's whose voice you think is more important regarding a show that featured disabled artists. If I felt that those white male voices were the authority, white male ableist voices that had never experienced disability or that experience, then that's me always kowtowing to the white patriarchy and to the colonizer. So I prefer to seek intersectional voices, voices who things are about, and I centralize them. I run decolonizing theatre workshops, and what I tell everybody is this is actually about centering yourself, because what happens is everybody who isn't white or isn't a man or isn't straight are told they're different, are told they're other, and they begin to separate from themselves. So they don't see themselves as the center character in their own story.
You can't see yourself, you learn how to cope. Internalize the pain or look to the rope. Enough is enough is enough is enough. Enough is enough is enough is enough. Tell the little brown girl to give up her dreams. Lower her self-esteem as she silently screams. Enough is enough is enough is enough. Enough is enough.
So a lot of decolonizing for me is bringing those folks from the margins back to themselves and placing their voice and their thoughts center. So they'll say things like, I don't expect to ever be like the central character in a show. I'm happy. I just want a good part. And I'm like, why the hell don't you ever expect to see it? Oh, well, I've never seen it before. So why should I dream of it? Okay, you've got to start dreaming of it. You've got to start letting go of all of that stuff we grew up with, being told our accents, our eyes, our thighs, our butts, our food, our whatever, that is not normal. We have to start going, actually, it is. Actually, this is beautiful to me. Actually, my point of view is vital, more important, more interesting, and more excellent than anybody else's. And it's about power. You know?
It's hard though, Candy, isn't it? Because it's very internalized, hey?
Hugely internalized. It's embedded from the minute we start reading fairy tales and watching television and going to see movies and seeing all the dudes that rape women get off and get their own television shows and Donald Trump being the head of the free world and every single theatre company bar one or two being run by white men. Like all of these things tell us that they are winning and that we are losing, and we like to back the winners, even if that's not ourselves. So for me, I work with young girls a lot, and I always say to them, it is a radical political act to love yourself, to say you're excellent, to be confident.
Yes. I'm here to take my place in the mythology, and part of my conviction is to tell you what I see.
There's a Angela Davis quote, which is just like to live by, I feel. She's got so many quotes to live by, but she says, we have to act as if it were possible to radically transform the world, and we have to do it all the time.
I really want to just ask you a final question about working together as sisters and being creative. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this something that you always talked about as kids? How did that come about?
For me, in the first place, was when we were creating Sister She, when I was creating it with Sarah Ward back in the day, we tried a lot of different people to write beats. We were not like, oh, we're already a crew. And Busty had a lot of other things going on. But what we found was, over and over again, people just didn't speak our language. Busty was the only person that spoke our language. And then as time's gone on, for me personally, music making wise, composition wise, Busty's the only person who can do it. Literally. Even if she wasn't my sister.
How's that make you feel, Busty?
Oh, it's lovely. But also true. Like, because I've lived in this world too, like, you know, it's kind of been such a long sort of her story of the kind of music I've been making and who I've been making it with, and very much so about a radical feminist voice coming through musically. It's an amazing experience for Candy to bring me words and ideas and lyrics, and then actually to go, this is kind of how it could sound, you know? So it's a very, it's a real process, you know, has its ups and downs. And that's how we roll.
I've learned a style as I've grown in my practice around collaboration and gentle collaboration and ensuring that my teams are stacked with activists and folks that I admire and are talented and award-winning, as well as a cultural notion and understanding of what we're up to. What I find is all the mansplaining and whitesplaining, that's so difficult. And it takes up too much time.
So much time.
Yeah.
When we could just be being brilliant.
Right.
You know?
So for me particularly, like, you know, if you look at our teams, they're very intersectional and feminist based. And lots of people talk about how hard it is to create these teams. And I'm like, no, I think the barrier is you just don't care enough and you don't have the will and your ignorance around who's out there. From this space and this caliber of people is willful ignorance, like everything, like misogyny, like racism. It's now willful because there's enough scholarship out there. There's enough books, there's enough films, there's enough everything for people to be what we need them to be in this current zeitgeist, which is anti-misogyny and anti-racist warriors.
My people are being blocked. 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 This shit is racism and this shit has to stop. My anger is vital and my temperature is hot. I want it to matter that my people are being blocked. Stage page screen comedy to hip-hop. Without black rappers, it's just not hip-hop. But people are being blocked, but people are being blocked. We are an Asian nation, my temperature is hot. This shit is racism and this shit has to stop. This is it, Australia, this is what I see. It sets me on fire because this is my country.
My thanks to Candy Bowers and Busty Beats. We'll put their details in the episode notes on our website, abc.net.au/noterace. You can get in touch with me on Twitter at Beverly Wang or email noterace@abc.net.au. We take emails and brief voice memos recorded on your phone. Thank you for listening, and thank you also for your reviews and sharing this podcast. If you haven't yet told a friend about It's Not a Race, it's never too late. I'd be thrilled if you would. We want to get out the word as much as possible, and it really helps other people find us. Okay, that's it from me. Cue the credits.
Beverly Wang created It's Not a Race and presents it every week or every time it gets released. And she does a great job.
Liana Hamid, she's our producer.
Matthew Crawford does the sound design.
Marty Peralta wrote the music. Sorry, Martin Peralta wrote the music.
And Lorena Allam and Andrea Ho, they're out of... Stuff that up, soz.
And Lorena Allam and Andrea Ho, they are our executive producers. Ta-da!